AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. One of the gems, absolute gems in the crowd of Minneapolis and St. Paul is the Bell Museum of Natural History. If you've not been to their new location up on Larpinder in Cleveland, you need to go up there. It is so worth the trip. The kids will love it. It is great fun. I have been a fan of it back when it was its previous incarnation on the University of Minnesota campus. I took my kids there a lot, and a lot of people might not be aware, first of all, that this is the museum is there, and it's a wonderful natural history museum that you need to go to, but it's been around for a very long time. Joining me right now is Barbara Coffin. She is the former head of media productions and adult programs at the Bell Museum, played an important role in the design of the new museum's exhibit gallery. She's executive producer of an Emmy Award-winning television documentary, Minnesota, A History of the Land, and co-editor of Minnesota's Endangered Flora and Fauna. She is also one of the authors of the book, A Natural Curiosity, The Story of the Bell Museum, which she did along with Lansing Shepard, Don Luce, and Gwen Chagrin. She's kind enough to join us. Barbara Coffin joining us right now to talk about this book. Hi, Barbara. How are you?
Hi, I'm just fine. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much. First of all, I'm envious of your job because the job that you had here, because that has to be a fun job when you're working in a great museum like the Bell Museum.
It was great. I mean, and with the team of us that worked on the book, it was took a long while to do, but it was really a great way to end a career for me. I retired and sort of just a couple of years ago before the book came out, and it was also a great pandemic project. You know, we all Zoomed together as we finished writing up the different chapters, and it's great. And so glad you're having me here on your show to talk about it.
Well, and I should say to everyone out there, the book is gorgeous. It is so well done. The photos, the art of it, the way it's laid out, it is just beautifully done. Congratulations on that.
Well, thank you. You know, I have to credit our book designer, Carrie Finkler Design, did the layout, and it is gorgeous. And I think the cover has one of the Bell Museum's famous dioramas of sandhill cranes on it. But there are over 350 color and black and white illustrations. So it's almost a coffee table type book, but it's got a lot of content and a lot of history.
A lot of that in there. Let's talk about the beginnings of the Bell Museum, because this goes back a long time ago into the 19th century, correct?
Correct, yeah. I mean, part of the timing of the book was to celebrate 150 years. The Bell Museum started in 1872, and 2022 is 150 years later. So, yes, it was back when the state was just getting started, I suppose. And the state legislature set up something actually called the Geological and Natural History Survey. So the idea was, you know, what do we have here in Minnesota? What mammals, what plants, what minerals? And as a part of that, they decided to establish a museum so scientific objects could be shown to the public. So we have a long history of both being sort of an academic research science museum and then a public program companion apart to that.
There was an interesting side note in regards to the beginning of the state, because once again, not only the Bell Museum, but they wrote the Historical Society into the state records really early too. There just seems to have been this understanding that we need to not preserve history. We also need to understand where we're at. There was some real progressive ideas, I guess you could say, back then when it came to education and preservation that I just don't think a lot of other states had at that point.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I do think that as states were formed, they would have, they would oftentimes put together a survey to understand what the natural resources were of the state. And certainly some of that was, and much of it was probably motivated economically, economic in that people wanted to know what they could get off the land. Now in Minnesota, probably one of the different things was that it came through the university. So the president of the university, that time went, you know, he made sure that it came, that the survey was based out of the university so that the scientific data would be saved for forever. And he was also committed to it being teaching collections as well as open to the public. It actually says, I think, in the legislation that the collections will be available for the public to see and to touch and get to understand.
Well, and that's, I think, one of the things which is also really unique is that that was an understanding of we want the public to see this. We want the people to see this. This is not just for academia and to be, you know, stored away in dusty shelves in the back room. It was meant for people to see.
Right. And of course, one of the early directors really was committed to that, a guy named Thomas Sadler Roberts. And for those people listening that might be birders, they would recognize his name because he started as director, I think, in 1911 and was there till 1939. And he's really the person that turned it into a strong public museum as well as an academic museum. And led tours from the very earliest parts of the 19th century. A lot of kids, like you said, you brought your kids to the museum. That has been and still is a very important audience. Although I would add that it's kind of a museum for all ages. You know, there is something there, and I would encourage people to come to the new museum. It's spectacular and surprising. I don't think a lot of people don't know what a gem it is.
Oh, it is.
Yeah, one thing that people love is there's a woolly mammoth there, a life-size woolly mammoth standing on a glacier. So it's like what the landscape looked like in Minnesota 10,000 years ago.
Joining us right now, once again, is Barbara Coffin. The book is A Natural Curiosity, The Story of the Bell Museum. And Barbara, when I told my dad went to the University of Minnesota. He was there from 49 to 52. And I told him, it's like, oh, yeah, I took the kids over to the Bell Museum. And my dad also, oh, the Bell Museum. And he was always so amazed. It does have, it's always seemed to have had a very prestigious reputation. He said that he remembers back when he was going to college that they'd bring in international groups that would come through because it was such a wonderful, the way that the exhibits were laid out, it was so well done.
Well, I think that's true, and we were very fortunate to have one of the world-renowned painters, diorama painters, do the dioramas that we have at the Bell Museum. And those all, they started in the early 1900s, but many of them, or most of them, were done in the 1940s. So your father would have probably seen them. They would have been really new. And a guy named an artist, Francis Lee Jacques, was borrowed from the American Museum of Natural History in New York City and brought out to paint the backgrounds and the backdrops to these wildlife habitat dioramas, which the Bell Museum is well known for, and they are some of in the world, actually. So I think we do have an international reputation there.
The paintings are spectacular. I mean, you can't even put a price on the things. Which brings up the question I have, because I believe up until the new museum was opened, those paintings had stayed in the same building, in the same rooms, hadn't they? That the idea to move them, that must have been a very ambitious decision.
Well, it was, and we weren't. We did, you know, a lot of research, and we talked with museums around the world that have moved their dioramas, but most of them have moved them from one part of a building to another. We were one of the first to do it and successfully do it, moving it from one side of town to another, or moving it from Minneapolis campus. And as much as we had experimented and tried to be sure that it was going to be successful, we didn't know until it happened. Because the dioramas, you're right, were built in place, so plaster walls on, they weren't made to be moved. Mm-hmm. They were just painted on a plaster wall. And they had been sealed up with glass, so they were in really good shape. But when we went to move them, you know, the possibility that the whole painting would crumble or something. But we had great conservationists and great people involved in the move, and it just worked so well.
Yeah, that would be the thing I think about. Is the scary part is that, you know, humidity, you know, stuff like that, that you can't really anticipate the change of happening there. You know, it's wonderful you put them back in into the new museum, because they truly are spectacular paintings of Minnesota's countryside, which are, I mean, like I said, I mean, I can't even put a price tag on one of those. I mean, in an art auction, I got to imagine there'd be a few million dollars each. They're just beautiful.
Yeah, they are. And in a sense, they are almost better now than they were in the old building, which, mm-hmm. of course, they were wonderful. But with the skill of putting the way they were, the backdrops were cleaned. You know, we thought, geez, the paint's going to come off. But they were very carefully cleaned. And then lighting it's all LED lights, which produce no heat. And the incandescent ones that we had before, there was issues of heat and fading. So we've got great LED lights. There's even one, the Lake Pepin diorama, which is many people probably know where Lake Pepin is down in the Mississippi River. There's a beautiful diorama of shorebirds on Lake Pepin, and there actually, if you look very closely, the lights are set so that it's like a cloud passes in front of the sun, and there's a slight dipping of the intensity of the light. So it's really quite fun and amazing.
The one that I can't stop watching, the one that I think it's the southeastern part of the state. Is that Pipestone area? It's that way?
Pipestone would be southwest.
Southeast. No, southwest. That's what I meant. Southwest. I mean, it's the southwestern side of the state where it's got, I think, the deer are in the diorama. It's this rolling hills and with the grasslands, and it's just gorgeous.
Yep, right now they all are. So it's great that you have been there, and it sounds like you have been there in the old one, and you've seen the new one. And
I'm a member. I'm a member. I have been a member for quite a long time. Once I went in there, I was like, you got to be kidding me. This is just amazing. And it is on par, as you say. Sometimes it is surprising and it's not more well known, because I would say that museum is on par with the best museums, you know, and the displays, the dioramas that you'll find in any museum in the country.
Yeah, no, I think it is. But it's also kind of a small museum, and it's not huge. In the new museum, we also have a planetarium, which Minnesota was sort of without for a while. The old planetarium was at the downtown Minneapolis Public Library, but it joined the Bell Museum in 2011, and that's very spectacular, too, to have a state-of-the-art planetarium, and then the permanent gallery is kind of like a journey through time, and you start out way up in the universe, in the beginning of the universe, and march up through time and through Minnesota's habitats via the dioramas.
And we should also mention, it is a University of Minnesota facility. Every time I've gone in there, there have been University of Minnesota students working in there, part of their educational experience, especially in the planetarium. I think that that's such an important element that you preserved as well.
Well, I think that has been the tradition for the lifetime of the museum. And in fact, in 1971, I was a tour guide there. So over 50 years ago, my first introduction to the Bell Museum, I'm from Illinois. I came up to the university to go to school and became a tour guide. And I'm sure it changed my life and my direction of my studies. And now I wasn't at the Bell Museum all that time. I went and worked at DNR and the Nature Conservancy and other places. But I did come back to the Bell Museum, and it sticks with you, and it's a great place.
One of the things your books touches on here is the move, and that basically it was a chance to go through the extensive collection you had as you were moving it to the new location. Is there a few things that you remember from that were rediscovered, per se, that were just like, wow, I can't believe that this is here?
Well, yeah, you're right. I mean, we started the project in 2014, and here it is 8 years later, and the book comes out. And at that point, we got bonding, and we knew we were going to be moving to the new building, and it seemed like, oof, what an opportunity. This building that we've been in for 75 years, huge basement with all sorts of storage, and we needed to go through everything, and we needed to figure out what went to University of Minnesota Archives, what went with us, and what got tossed. And I think in the end, it was like 250 linear feet of boxes of stuff. The University Archives was interested in a lot of it. And then we would hold things out, photographs, images that we could envision being a part of the book.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the big challenges in doing the book was we tried not to make it a dry history book. It does move from 1872 to the present, but was what stories do we tell to pick out and move us from 1872 to the present? And going through all the archives and looking at the past records of different people that had worked there was what we did. And I don't know, you asked what were some interesting discoveries we found?
Or more part of the history of the museum that all of a sudden was, you know, I don't think lost is the right term, but it's like, oh, wow, this book should maybe cover some of this element.
Oh, see, there was lots of different things. And I mean, one of the long-term directors, Walter Breckenridge, what we discovered was an interesting little story. He met his wife and then was going off to the Arctic to do work. And after 6 weeks, they decided they were going to get married. And they got married overnight, basically, and she joined him and went off. And so there is a little story, sidebar story, which is kind of fun, about spending the honeymoon in the Arctic on a scientific research project. And Breckenridge's records were all his, you know, just combing through his records, and he was very good at documenting things. So there is a chapter about his work in there.
And I do like, one of the things I do like about the beginning of the book here, and that first chapter when you're talking about him being born, is you do make it, you know, no, these people went out into the wild. You want to go and learn about Minnesota's biodiversity? Well, off you go. And they were out and, you know, they brought it back for everyone to see.
Yeah. No, that's great.
Congratulations on this book. This is, it is, I will say it's a coffee table book. I think it's spectacular. I think the history that you bring forward in this, and as well, it's such a needed companion to the museum itself, because there are a lot of people that aren't unaware of the Bell Museum. And as far as it goes, I mean, they can pick up this book and they can see that this is a long-standing history and is a well-established museum. And it's just, like I said, a jewel in the Twin Cities community. And I think your book absolutely captures the history of this facility and the new facility absolutely perfectly. I think it's just wonderful.
Well, that's great. I think the other thing we tried to do is it wasn't just one point of view. The main character of chapters might be a personality or a scientist at the Bell Museum, or it could have been a public program like the Touch and See Room, which is kind of a legacy of the Bell Museum, started in the 1960s. And we were one of the first museums where we actually had a room where people could touch bones and furs and have live animals. Or other main characters sometimes were a scientific discovery, like the reintroduction of peregrine falcon in Minnesota was really co-founded by a director of the Bell Museum, along with the Raptor Rehabilitation Center. So hopefully I think it's intriguing history. It isn't just dry stuff.
Oh, it's
human stories.
I think it's wonderful stories. And I think it does capture the people and the passion behind the people that were behind this museum throughout the entire history of it. A Natural Curiosity, The Story of the Bell Museum. Barbara Coffin is once again one of the four authors of this book. Goes to the Bell Museum, and then I'm going to presume this book is over in the gift shop. Pick up the book over there at the gift shop after you go to the museum, because it is, both of them are truly spectacular. Barbara, congratulations on the book. Thank you very much. I appreciate the time today.
Thank you so much.
My absolute pleasure. Barbara Coffin, kind enough to join us. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.